Raising women's voices, one story at a time. Welcome to the She Said Project Podcast. Hey, Carrie Rasso.
Hey, Jeanette Jerzyk.
Today is a special episode of the She Said Project podcast. Do you know why?
Tell me.
Because we're welcoming one of the speakers from our very first show in a new community. In 2023, we welcomed That's What She Said to the community of Danville, Illinois, which is not too far from our mothership community of Champaign-Urbana. And so our guest today stood on the stage not very long ago and welcomed a whole new slew of ladies into the She Said sisterhood.
Yep. I was very lucky to be in the front row on a stormy night. It was great because we didn't know if the show was really going to go on, and it did, and it was spectacular.
Thank goodness. There was some sticky weather. We were a little bit concerned, but yes, I'm very grateful the show did go on because those were stories that absolutely needed to be told, needed to be heard. And I'm so grateful to our podcast listeners for joining us today so they get to hear, experience, and feel the power of today's guest. So it's my absolute honor and pleasure to welcome Hannah Landis to the She Said Project podcast. Welcome, Hannah.
Thank you so much, Jeanette. I'm so happy to be here. This has been such a cool experience to be part of the She Said Project.
So I had 4 kids in 5 years, and I love telling my birth stories. I love hearing other people's. And so the second I heard your background, I was like, oh, we're going to talk. I'm going to tell you every gory detail.
I can't wait.
Does that happen to you a lot?
Everywhere I go.
I bet.
I'm going to validate your comment because I had the pleasure of working with Hannah on her story and meeting her for the very first time, you know, as we do in a coffee shop, that first casual.
You definitely told me your birth story.
And
I remember.
Yes, that is absolutely true. So for our friends listening, Hannah is a certified midwife. And that is very much a part of the story that she shared on the She Said stage. I don't know if I'm glad for you or if that's uncomfortable for you.
But it's never uncomfortable. I don't know what makes me uncomfortable, but definitely not that.
You definitely make a safe space and a comfort zone. Like, we went right to the birth story in our very first meeting. It's true.
It's so great. I think so many women want to talk about that experience. And, you know, it isn't exactly... like, you know, you don't bring it up at the grocery usually or in your, you know, if you're trying a case or whatever your job is. And so the second I hear somebody is a midwife or in that field, then I'm like, okay, so then the placenta. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just jump right in. I get so excited to talk about it.
My favorite is really when I'm working with clients and their mothers or their grandmothers come along and whatever we're doing triggers something for them to tell a story that maybe they've never told before. And they dive in and then they're processing and I'm listening and they're telling a story of a totally different experience than maybe what my client is doing, which is, you know, in their home, natural. So it's been really interesting to have that experience of, you know, even older women who are maybe processing that story for the first time.
Do you think birth stories have been taboo for certain generations? Something
Definitely.
We don't talk about?
Yeah. Definitely.
So the work you do, I mean, it's akin to the work that we do at the She Said Project, just by creating that safe space and actually just sitting back and listening, you're allowing these women the gift of talking about something that is so powerful, so intimate, and life-changing, life-creating. I went there. I'm seeing the magic that you create that we are very familiar with, and it's pretty powerful stuff. Now, I don't stay in the room when the woman goes into labor like you do, but it's got to be a beautiful, magical, crazy, insane, challenging process.
All of those things, but such a privilege that someone would welcome me into that space. And, you know, I think it's why I said yes to the She Said Project, because it's another way that women can have that space to tell their stories. And, you know, I grew up with a lot of men. I grew up with a lot of brothers. I grew up with ideas about women, and it's taken me all of these decades and all of this time and the work that I do to really understand the importance of having a space to tell our stories and be who we authentically are. And so I hope to be that and to bring that into my practice. And so it was so neat to find another venue to explore that.
When I was a little girl, I used to eavesdrop on, I grew up with a lot of women, so eavesdropping on my mom and all of my aunts telling those stories that I knew were somehow, this was just for, you know, around the table when they were having coffee, and how they, looking back, I think they were processing, because often in those days, you know, childbirth was not the experience it is now, and it was not the openness to talk about these things and to make placenta jokes. It just wasn't happening then. So they all were together and had that in each other. And then I have thought about that when we did the show. I wanted it to be like sitting around at somebody's house, telling those stories, maybe stories you aren't comfortable telling out in the world, but you could do it in this safe space. So we're in that safe space. And so when I saw you, and you have just such an open demeanor about you, your face, your everything just makes you want to like, and then came the 80s, and then I got my period. And then like, you must just get this at like the grocery store and everywhere. Like, have you always been that person that people come to?
I have not necessarily always been that person. Yeah, I mean, I think that there's been a lot of growth, and my family would be surprised. They are surprised that I ended up where I'm at, serving women, being interested in this work. But it really comes back for me to being around that kitchen table. While I said I was surrounded by men, I mean, of course, there was my mother and aunts and sister-in-laws too. And it was really in those moments of them talking about their births that this early interest started getting cultivated in me. And my mother, shout out to my amazing mother who birthed 8 children and raised multiple more. She started giving birth in the 60s where things were really, really different. And she wasn't given any autonomy. She was told what to do. She was told her breasts were not big enough to breastfeed. And so she didn't. And she had 4 children under that, you know, iron fist kind of rule of the medicalized birth of the day. And then she had an 8-year period between children, and she ended up having 4 more children, and she did it in an entirely different way. She had wandered into a bookstore in Seattle, Washington, where she read a book by La Leche League on breastfeeding. And she discovered, well, having boobs that are small is not a contraindication for breastfeeding, it turns out.
So for once, like, size really doesn't matter.
Really doesn't matter. No. And so she did things differently. And so she would often repeat this narrative that she had done things 2 ways in almost a scientific manner, right? We had the control group and then the intervention group, and then she had opinions about how it turned out.
So, I bet that was an interesting conversation. Like, you have 2 sample groups, and you get to hear mom's feedback. My mom was very into the La Leche League. Like, right. That was her. My mother was Earth Mother. I mean,
I love that.
She had 3 babies all natural. My sister had 3 babies all natural. I had 2 almost all natural. I followed in her footsteps. That was what I wanted. I mean, just hearing the history of mom and the births, and I remember working with you, and there was definitely a journey for you to get comfortable, to find your passion in this work and to work with women in this way. I think it'd be really great if we went ahead and played your story for our listeners so that they can truly understand the process that you went through to becoming a certified midwife, because there's definitely some complications there. Let's take a listen to Hannah Landis on stage from That's What She Said in Danville, Illinois in 2023 with her story, The Big Fail.
When I was 10 years old, I wrote an essay in school that said, "When I grow up, I want to be a doctor, but I'm afraid of blood." 10-year-old Hannah thought tackling a fear like that was a bridge too far to ever cross. As time went on, the idea that I was just a weak girl, not likely to take on a challenge, only grew in my mind. I never saw myself as talented, not good at speaking, not athletic, not smart at math like my brother. Even though I got A's in those subjects in school, the narrative in my mind at the time was that I was definitely not good at science and math like boys are. So when eventually I marched off to college, I decided to study anything that wasn't those things. I started with an education major. The reason being, the only professional women I can remember seeing growing up were teachers. Even my mom's midwife was a man. However, I quickly changed my major when I took a political science course that captivated me. Science, but no hard science or math. No chemistry labs, no calculus. Count me in. It did happen to highlight something I did see as special about me. My propensity to argue. Disagree with established rules and go against the flow. Oh yeah. Political science was a perfect fit. So I graduated and started a master's, and amidst a series of absolutely devastating and life-changing events, including the death of my dad, I dropped out. Quitting my master's felt like a big failure. But amidst all the death and sadness that descended on my life during that time, I realized something. Failure is not the worst thing that can happen. And from that moment on, everything changed. So longing to connect with my father's memory, I abandoned every other path and decided to pursue business instead, like he had. So I got the idea to start a coffee shop, only I had no money. So I worked 3 minimum wage jobs and went to every bank in town and finally convinced one to give me a small business loan, and I marched forward with my plans and opened a coffee shop and roastery. A few years later, I sold the coffee shop, and it somehow felt like a huge failure. But also like that wasn't the worst thing that could happen. One day, my husband Drew and I, when we had been married 5 years but had never thought to discuss having children, found out we were pregnant. The first thing I did was open the phone book, because this was back in the old days, to search for a home birth midwife, because I was from Washington State, the state in the U.S. with the highest home birth rate, and also, relatedly, the best maternity care statistics in the country. This was where my mom and my extended family members had had babies at home with midwives. And there was no midwife in the phone book. For primarily political reasons, in Illinois, home birth midwives only operated underground. In that moment, all my interests coalesced, and I found my cause. Helping families get the evidence-based healthcare they desire and deserve, helping myself and other women achieve physiologic birth at home with a midwife, arguing with politicians. I went to work lobbying for the cause, and eventually I apprenticed and became a home birth midwife myself. Now, the way that certified professional midwives are trained is an apprentice model. We're trained in the field on the job, and it didn't require any advanced science or advanced math. The bachelor degree I already have was an adequate starting point. So I spent years studying during my kids' nap times and attending births while they slept at night and got my certification. But there was still one problem. Certified professional midwives are not licensed in Illinois. I regularly thought back to that first birth I had attended in my training, where there was, trigger warning, so much blood. We walked in the door and the baby had come so fast we didn't get there in time, and there was a pool of blood and it was my job to clean it up, and whew, it was trial by fire. Childbirth often involved blood, of course. Could I handle it? That question didn't go away quickly, but came up over and over throughout my years of training. But I realized walking out of there, that first birth, that first night where I cleaned up blood, that I probably could do anything I put my mind to. So the years went on and the problem persisted. CPMs were not licensed in the state and the chance of it ever happening seemed slim, and I was starting to give up hope. So when one day I heard that Carl was opening a school of medicine at the U of I, it felt like a significant moment, and it felt like, as had happened many times over the years, something aligned. And I decided it was now or never. And how sad it would be if it were never. So at 36 years old, I marched off to finally take the prerequisites for medical school. At the local community college to hopefully eventually take my shot. What's a dream anyway if you don't try to follow it? Exactly. I thought maybe I'll fail, but maybe I won't. It helped that my best friend, who is also my husband, believed in me wholeheartedly and encouraged me to jump. This is the same man who once took a 2-month leave from his job when I said, "Let's go live in Haiti for the winter," and proceeded to homeschool our children and potty train our terrorist toddler in a village in Haiti while I caught babies at a local birth center there. So with that critical support, I enrolled in those basic science and advanced math classes that I had avoided for so long that I had told myself I wasn't good enough to take. The first weeks of that initial chemistry class felt impossible. Mm-hmm. Nothing was coming easily. So one day, while hanging out at the coffee shop that I co-own here in Danville with my brother Sam, the one who's good at math, I saw a kid from my chemistry class, only this wasn't any college kid. This was a high school kid taking college classes, exactly 20 years my junior. And I realized I felt less intimidated by him than I did those 19, 20-year-olds who had it all together. So I marched over and used my clout as an older person and the owner of the coffee shop that he was sitting in to convince him to study with me, study chemistry, and of course it worked. We became a very unlikely pair of friends, this 16-year-old high school kid and 36-year-old middle-aged woman, as he so rudely called me. And we traveled together on this pre-med path and encouraged one another along the way. Wow. I finished my prerequisites and I started studying for the MCAT, okay. Widely regarded as one of the most difficult tests ever written. During the pandemic, with 4 children at home being homeschooled, I studied for the MCAT. Well, I stayed out all night working as a midwife, helping families stay at home and avoid the hospital during a global pandemic, I studied for the MCAT. And I finished a calculus course and studied for the MCAT, and I cooked breakfast, lunch, and dinner for special diets every day for my kids and studied for the MCAT. And then one day, in mid-2020, I took the MCAT, and I did really well, by the way. And a couple hours later, I got called to a birth, and I stayed out nearly all night, and the next morning, I cooked breakfast for my kids. I realized that day, after a nap, I didn't want to be a doctor. I had already done whatever it was I had set out to do. I proved to myself I could do hard things. And I loved the clinical practice I already had. The pandemic convinced me how essential it was that women had the option for care at home, if that was what they desired. But we still had that one pesky problem. Certified professional midwives were not licensed in Illinois, as they were in other states. Should I leave? The pandemic had also made it obvious staying in this community that my family is embedded in and loves was a higher priority to me than other goals. So I decided I had to go to work. Almost exactly a year later, I watched as the bill I served as legislative liaison for the Illinois Council of Certified Professional Midwives passed both houses. I got to be in the room when Governor Pritzker signed the historic piece of legislation that women before me had worked on year after year for over 40 years. I got to see it move across the finish line, a step toward more autonomy in healthcare for women. So I failed to go to medical school, but I learned so much. I learned I love science and math, maybe not so much math. And I learned it's never too late. Empowered by those two things, I found the most rigorous scientific training program where I could explore the science of maternal health and nutrition, which I had fallen in love with throughout the process. And I'm so proud to say that in about 6 weeks, I will graduate with a master's in molecular and cellular biology at UIUC. A program that I promise required all the hard science and math. How women are treated during the childbearing year is a big deal, with big consequences. And there is so much more work to do. If I wouldn't have failed, I wouldn't be here doing this important work. It was a great failure.
So, Hannah, it was a great failure.
What the fail?
What the fail? So many failures, but it got you to where you are today. And look at all of your successes and look at your career and the things that you've seen, the things you get to do, and the things that you've taught us along the way. What you said about the medicalized institution of birth. My best friend, Frank, his mother was told that stress will curdle your breast milk. And she, yeah, that she had anxiety and stress,
oh my
and
gosh.
She could not breastfeed because her breast milk would be curdled and sour. And so she bottle fed her babies because that's what
sour
she was.
Milk.
That's what she was told. That
my mom was unconscious until her fourth. She was, I think it was ether. I mean, she
yeah,
was,
yeah.
She was
they
out.
They give you the ether. And that's how my grandmother gave birth.
Isn't it called the twilight state?
Yeah, yeah. And she was not even able to access those stories. It was
that's what makes
too
me
painful.
Sad is I love those stories so much. And I think three of my mom's four, she was completely, she doesn't remember any of it. Like literally waking up.
How do you
up
get the baby out?
Forceps.
For serious?
Mm-hmm. Always. 100% of the time.
So the mother is unconscious and they yank the baby out. Mm-hmm. Do they do it like on the rhythm of the contractions?
I'm
or
assuming.
Who the hell knows, right?
I mean, it sounds so dangerous.
Why was that decidedly better?
I was just reading something about when we moved away from midwives, and often it was Black women in the community. And as we started to transition from, you know, it's all the things, you know, we want to take women out of positions of power. We certainly want to take Black women out of positions of power. And we want to make this powerful thing that women have control over, one of the few things they had control over in that time. And we're going to take that, too.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the American history of midwifery was that it was Black midwives that birthed our nation. And, you know, white people seem to have no problem having Black midwives come and serve them until there were what was first called male midwives, which soon became called obstetricians, who came in and started a smear campaign against midwifery in saying that it was a whole marketing campaign that midwives were dirty, unsafe, uneducated, and a lot of that was racist rhetoric. And so while many of these midwives actually at the time had a state license, those licenses were revoked. And that happened in Illinois in the 1970s. Midwives had actually carried a state license to practice, and the state revoked the license.
So the licensing used to exist, and then it went away.
That's right.
And you were part of the movement to bring it back.
Right. So it started with some really courageous and amazing women decades ago who knew it wasn't right and knew that women had the right to birth wherever and with whomever they wanted, and that birth doesn't have to be a medical procedure, that it can be a normal family event.
Which it was for centuries and centuries.
Right. And so they started working, and it was a very long legal road to make it happen. And I started on this path 15 years ago, and I just remember the discouragement at that point in time that it probably would never happen.
But yeah. Then it did.
But then it did.
So you are a licensed midwife?
So that's complicated, okay. Jeanette. So the state passed the licensure bill in late 2021. And so right now, the Illinois Department of Professional Regulation is drafting the rules governing the license. So there's been a nice grace period for us that we're living in the in-between times. And it's something I watched the Indiana midwives go through a decade ago. It's still a challenge to access services, to get the respect from the institutions for the work that we do.
But the work is not done.
The work is not done. And it won't ever be, because other countries have maternity care built around the idea that the low-risk woman should have midwifery-led care. So that doesn't mean a midwife under an obstetrician. That means midwifery-led. And it's really interesting. Medicaid, actually, in 2019, published a study that had been in the works for quite some time involving tens of thousands of people and three different types of intervention, in which they were trying to look at this idea, why are maternal outcomes so bad in America compared to every other industrialized nation? So they tried some different interventions that might improve outcomes. And the one intervention that was shown to very significantly improve outcomes was midwifery-led care. So in the write-up, in the study synopsis, they wrote, you know, this isn't taking midwives and sticking them inside of hospitals, because that is still a midwife who is, you know, working for an institution, a medical institution. And that's not a bad thing for many things. But when it comes to maternity care, the facts are in, the data's there, that it doesn't lead to the best outcome. So we even have now Medicaid, the Medicaid working group, saying, well, we know what can improve outcomes, not only in morbidity and mortality, but also saving $2,000 for each mother-baby pair in the first year of life by preventing hospitalizations unrelated to childbirth and health, right? So it's interesting. It's becoming mainstream, but we also have so much work to do.
You are clearly at the forefront of this work. Like, I just got an education. It's one thing for you to serve your clients, patients,
clients,
but clearly you had to go down a deep path of research, and you're incredibly knowledgeable. I loved in your story, you slipped in these phrases that absolutely caught my attention, and they were so well placed when you added things like evidence-based, and then you said, relatably, the maternal mortality rates in the state of Washington. You're like, relatively so. Like, you brought those moments in, so it was your story, but also like an education for our audience. And that's always a beautiful time when you can learn something through the eyes of a woman who's experienced something. So thank you. Thank
I'm
you for
always
bringing
trying
that.
To turn everything into a TED Talk.
It was fabulous. I just loved every second
Thanks,
of it.
Guys.
I mean, talking about the expert on the subject here. So, Carrie, you remember in her story, she talked about challenging herself and going back for her master's degree. I think just very recently, before we recorded this episode, you finished. You finished your master's and graduated and walked. And you have a master's, an MS in molecular and cellular biology. Ding, ding.
Boom, boom.
Did my homework. And you continue to challenge yourself. You continue to not accept the status quo for yourself, for your family, for your clients, for the state, for women. That's absolutely something that I admire in you and makes you incredibly special.
Thanks.
Do you hear that a lot?
I'm over here blushing so bad.
Just so happy knowing that you're out there advocating for women,
right?
And educating women and just all of those things. Like, that's right here.
I can't tell you how much I learned spending several months in her presence and just all the, there were so many things that did not make it on the stage, just so many incredible conversations, so much detail, both in your experiences, in your history, in the history of midwifery in the state of Illinois, like just like blew my mind because I didn't know. We don't know.
And I think the difference between, so my mom, who was, you know, pretty much knocked out during her deliveries, to the experience I had, and then now I have daughters, and thinking that's one generation of how much, and it has to be women talking to women and educating each other. And I remember, like, I thought I was pretty educated, but I remember saying to my midwives, like, what was that? Was that me? And they were so great because they walked me through, and there were things like I always felt like I was a full participant of this thing that was happening.
Yeah, and I love how you said that, a full participant, because that's what it should be. You should be the central character. And there are people who describe this experience like they are an accessory, like they are like a non-playable character in the process of childbirth. And that's not what we should be doing, right? Like, you should always be the central character in what's happening. That's always stuck out to me. Someone described it as like it was a play that was going on around them, and maybe they weren't even a part of it.
All this was happening around, and yeah, the baby's just going to show up at some point.
Right. And yeah, they're just kind of this accessory.
Yes. I remember very intentionally choosing and telling, you know, my OB, my birth plan, I did not want, what's the thing in your
epidural?
I didn't want that because I wanted to feel everything. I wanted to participate. I'm very much into the inspire emotion, feel all the feels, and I wanted all of it, the pain, the joy.
Oh, yeah, not me.
Oh, you know,
I mean, I did, but it was like, is there a workaround here?
Right. It's like you do until, like, it's there.
Yeah. And then I was like, okay, so maybe not that, but is there something we could talk about? Like,
no, I told her, don't even offer it to me, because in the moment, I don't know that I'll have the strength to say right, no, so right. Don't even offer it. And she didn't. She honored my wishes, which was absolutely great. Right. So I had the birth that I wanted as much as possible. So yeah, I wonder what it would be like to have been at home with a midwife. I do wonder. I don't know that I had that option. So thinking
back. But that's
back,
the beauty of having that option. That would be the beauty. You know, there, like in my family, there are a bunch of girls. So like one woman, one of my sisters was like laboring on the side of a mountain, and that worked for her. And for me, I was like, I'm very OCD. Like, I want to go somewhere else. Yeah. I want to come home to my house. Everything's tidy and in order. That worked for me. And then another sister, like, it was somewhere in between. But the whole point is, like, what works for you?
That
and if
really
you don't
is.
Even have that option, yeah, it's taken off the table for you.
That's really the point, that you need to be where you feel safe. And for many women, if not most women, that's the hospital. But for some women, it's not. And it's important that they are where they feel safest, because that's where childbirth is safest. Where,
and that's
you
what our
feel
norm.
Safest.
We've, you know, right. And is that because it's where you naturally feel safer, or because that's the image that we have?
Right. There's
many
some
of
that.
Us grown up with.
You talked to me a lot about women trusting themselves, but also the medical professionals believing and trusting the women who are, you know, who are the ones having the child. Like you said, you shared that there's a lot of
a lot of stories about
doubt and disbelief around what the woman feels or wants or experiences, and not really trusting your own body at that point.
Right. Yeah, it's so important to hear what women are saying. That keeps them safe. It keeps everybody safe if we can really take the time and listen and then believe. Because it's a principle that I adopted a long time ago, and it's actually, it's surprisingly controversial that I believe the story a woman tells me, and it hasn't proven me wrong yet. Even when it sounded wild, and then my gut is like, I don't know about this. It's always been true. And then this reward from believing that story has been enormous. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to keep doing it. Even if I am proven wrong someday, maybe that'll happen, but it's still worth it.
Your fails are epic. I would take your fails any day.
I'm all about the epic fails.
Epic fails got you to where you are today.
Yeah, I'm not afraid to fail. I'm really not.
Obviously. 10 years old. I want to be a doctor, but I'm afraid of blood. Hannah, you have given our listeners and Carrie and myself so many things to think about and reflect on, lessons learned. Remind me when we're done here, I will send you a link. Carrie actually shared one of her labor stories on stage, and that's what she said as part of her opening act. And yeah, I mean, you went there, you shared the good, the bad, the ugly. So I'll send you that link later. Nice. All right. But we want to thank you for coming in and talking to us here on the podcast. Thank you so much for spending time with the She Said Project. I have to say that you were one of an amazing group of women who said yes to this first inaugural experience in Danville. I had such an amazing time getting to know these women, like just powerhouses, right?
Yes.
I hope that the whole experience brought you joy, and I don't know, I hope it did for you a fraction of what you were able to provide to me and the women that we worked with through this process.
Yeah, I mean, just getting to know the women that I shared the stage with was the best part. And that relationship continuing, and they are impacting my community that I care about so much. And I can't wait to see what's next.
Yeah, there's a lot of great things happening in Danville. And we're so glad that She Said is now there on the ground. We're not going anywhere. We will keep sharing women's stories for many years to come. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you to our listeners. Thank you to our partners in crime, Illinois Public Media. Thank you, Carrie Rosso, for being one of the co-founders of this amazing movement. This is Jeanette Jerzyk, National Director of the She Said Project. Thank you for joining us today on the She Said Project podcast.
Over and out.
Thank you for listening to the She Said Project podcast in partnership with Illinois Public Media. All materials contained in the podcast are the exclusive property of the She Said Project and That's What She Said LLC. For more information on our live shows, go to shesaidproject.com. This podcast was made possible with support from Carl and Health Alliance and presented by Sterling Wealth Management, empowering women to live their best lives.